Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Jackson on the field. He's got Drew. 35, 30.
Want to get no punch. Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And let's get right to it here, ladies and gentlemen. Let's bring in Tom Rock from Arizona. He's been there all week listening to the owners, listening to the head coaches. And one of the head coaches that spoke this morning, Paul, at the NFC Coaches Breakfast was Giants head coach Tom Coughlin. And let's bring in Tom right now. Tom was right there listening. And Tom, from what I understand, Tom had some very, very important things to say about Siri.
Yeah. Siri is not going to do well in training camp. I don't think Siri's going to make the 53-man roster. Man, this is one of the most casual settings that we get to see Tom in all year, and it's very relaxed and so very open, and we had a lot of fun. We had a couple of good laughs actually about that. He was talking about how he tried to get directions from his iPhone once. And, he says he doesn't trust her. Yeah, he couldn't get Siri to shut up. He was about two blocks away from his house. He knew exactly where he was. She was still barking directions at him. So, I think that's going to be a quick divorce, that marriage between Tom Coughlin and Siri.
Tom, you know, the one thing that I picked up out of all the comments that you've been twittering out from the meetings in Arizona, the fact that Jackie Brown and Bennett Jackson came up in conversation with Coach Coughlin about potentially moving to safety. That is a weak spot. It is a thin spot on this roster right now. It is the spot that has drawn the most attention of the fans and the callers. Can you expand a little bit about on what he said and why he thinks those guys could do it?
He didn't say much other than to mention it. He did say that he thought that Bennett Jackson was coming along well with his rehab from knee surgery that kept him on IR last year. But I think you just look at the guys and you see that their size and their athleticism, they seem to be the types of players who could make that change to go back to safety. And even you look at Bennett Jackson, he wasn't really a polished quarterback to begin with. So maybe that's even a better spot for him at safety than a cornerback. And the safety that they had for a couple of years there, that was their Pro Bowl safety, Antoine Roller. Remember, he came into the league as a cornerback.
Sure.
So this isn't an unheard of transition for players to make, and as they find their footing in the league to kind of make that switch. But I think he likes their size and their speed. It did not sound like they were going to add anybody else to free agency. Not that there's many people still out there. But Tom said basically we have one more chance to fill the holes on the depth chart there at that position. And he was talking about the draft. He wasn't talking about free agency. So it sounds like they may. I'm sure they'll pick somebody up. I don't know how high in the draft, but they'll pick up a safety or two, maybe even. They have to have people out there to practice. Let's face it, when OTAs come around, and right now they only have the two on the roster, and neither of them has ever started a game at the position. So it's definitely the black hole of the roster right now.
And Tom, those two guys are Cooper Taylor and Nat Burhey, and Tom did have a bit of a vote of confidence for Nat Burhey, said he could not only play in the box, but he also trusts him as a center fielder, something he didn't do a whole lot of in college.
No, he was more of a hybrid player in college, a linebacker. I think they call it the Aztec position out San Diego State where he played, and it was almost like a Deion Grant role that he played with the Giants for a couple of years there. So he seemed to think that Burhey, they really liked what he brought on special teams. They liked his athleticism and his physicality, and so they're going to put him out there, I think, and it seems like it's his position right now. Where Cooper Taylor stands, I'm not quite sure. We didn't really get into that, but Tom was making it sound like Burhey's going to be one of the two starting safeties when things roll out, at least in the fall.
Tom, the other name that I saw come up in your tweets in terms of the conversation with the coach was Victor Cruz. The basis that none of us have had the opportunity to see him do anything since the offseason has begun, what did he add about that?
He said he saw Victor running, which was a good thing, I think.
None of us
have seen that yet. and Tom said that, from what he's heard from the medical people, Victor's gonna come back and be 100% physically. Now the timing of that is what's still up for question, I guess, because will it be at the start of training camp? Will it be a couple of weeks into the season? Tom kind of made a reference that it could even linger into the regular season where he's still not ready yet, and sort of paralleled that to what happened with Odell last year. Where they were waiting around for him to be ready and then finally unleashed him on the world.
Literally.
With Victor, it's obviously going to be a very inactive spring. He's gonna be taking it easy and mostly rehabbing and probably not doing a lot of football stuff until he's targeted to start training camp. Tom mentioned that's the hope, but that's not a hard and fast deadline. And we've seen players in the past come through here that recovering from injury and they try and push it. They try and meet those artificial deadlines. We saw it with JPP with his back, so with Beeson last year with his foot. And those things never seem to work out very
right.
well. So I think they're going to – maybe they've learned a little bit of a lesson there, and they're going to have to listen to his body more than the NFL calendar.
Yeah, and it seems like, and we're joined by Tom Rock from Newsday, Tom, that they're going to take a similarly cautious course with offensive lineman Jeff Schwartz.
Schwartz, yes. Yeah, he's a little bit further along, I think, and probably a little less serious of an injury. But, they're going to take it easy on him in the spring, and it seems like he'll be ready for the start of training camp. But they're not going to push him too much during the OTAs and mini camps and things like that. Of course, they said the same thing about Eli last year on his ankle, and that's worked out pretty well. So,
that's true.
Everybody heals at a different rate, I guess. We all know what kind of things Eli could do.
You mentioned Beeson a little bit earlier, Tom. Did Coach mention him at all? I didn't see him in your tweets. I don't know if I lost it or just didn't see it. But is there any update on his progress?
We didn't get a physical update, but we certainly talked about his role on this team and as a potential leader to fill that void that Antrell is leaving. And, he's going to be one of the guys, I think, that they need to step up, because when you look at that defense, there's a lot of new faces, but there's not a lot of really fiery, nasty leader guys like they've had over the years. Strahan, Pierce.
So they need more energy, right? They need more energy.
Well, they got to bring the dog. I don't know who's going to bring the dog now that Antrell isn't there. The swag and things like that, all those things that he brought.
Sure.
And just the attention that Tom said of always wanting to make the team better. So, Beeson can certainly do that. We've seen him do that. But he's got to be on the field to do that, and that's going to be the big question mark. Yeah, this could easily be John Beeson's defense, and he could run it and handle things like that. But he can't do that from the sideline or from the training room.
Sure.
Now, Tom, I thought there was one other interesting nugget that Tom brought up that you tweeted about, speaking about how Dwayne Harris is similar to David Tyree, but it was your little mention after that, and this is probably going to give some Giant fans agita that call up our show and complained about this last season, that he might still plan on using Odell Beckham as a returner from time to time over the course of next year.
Oh boy.
I think he's going to use them. I didn't actually make this reference, but I thought of it right away. It's kind of the way the Eagles used DeSean Jackson for a couple of years where – late in the game when you really need something done, you throw him back there, and he's sort of the home run hitter, the guy comes off the bench as a pinch hitter and can win the game for you right there. The Giants certainly know how that can happen on the punt return once in a while late in the game. But, it sounded like Harris was brought in to play special teams, and he's going to be, Tom talked about his versatility as a gunner and a blocker and all of those other things that he could do on those special teams units, and a returner, kickoff return, and punt return. So I think the job's going to be primarily him, but they're going to have other guys there too. And I know they They love the way Randall fields the ball inside the 10 with his sure hands, and Odell brings them that big threat. And so, you know, even if he doesn't return it for a long return, it certainly cuts the field in half, because ideally punters are going to want to avoid him and kind of punch it out of bounds, and that may save the Giants 10 or 12 yards right there, based on a guy putting it further down the field. So,
you know, Tom,
all those things will add up, but I think you know, Odell. He said Odell's going to have to be in the mix. Everybody's going to have to be. They're going to have to have more than one punt returner, and Odell's certainly going to be there.
You know, Tom, and I feel bad. I feel like I buried the lead here. Tom Coughlin did make a very important lineup announcement that Odell Beckham Jr. will be the backup field goal kicker in 2015.
Yeah, you know what? He mentioned the backup quarterback too. I don't know how Ryan Nassib feels about that, but. Yeah, I mean, he could certainly do anything with on the football field, probably on any athletic field that he steps onto. Odell Beckham would be a superstar. So, yeah, the Giants are very excited to see him in his second year. And Tom painted a picture of Ben McAdoo as sort of a mad scientist with beakers bubbling over and lights swinging over his head, trying to figure out ways to use all these weapons he has now, including Shane Vereen, who Tom's very excited about having in there. As a pass catching threat, and that it sounds like they're going to use him a lot of the same ways that the Patriots did in terms of you know using those passes as extended handoffs and just getting him in space and letting them scoot around.
I think the only other question I'd have for you, Tom, did he much talk about how Steve Spagnuolo's defense may or not be similar to the one he ran when he was with the Giants the first time around?
He said that it's not going to be very different. He said to the naked eye and to the trained eye, it's probably going to be pretty similar to what he ran. The difference is going to be in the personnel, of course. They're not going to have the dominant defensive line.
Sure.
Or maybe they will, but they certainly
right now they don't
improve a defensive line right now.
Sure.
Compared to what they had when Spags was here. And you know, they have some different personnel. They're certainly probably stronger at cornerback than they were back in those days. When you look at DRC and Prince, but I think it's basically going to be the same. And it's kind of interesting because when Tom made the change at offensive coordinator last year, he went in a completely different direction. And now this year he's making the change of defense. He's kind of going more traditional, more status quo. And in both cases, he said that decision was made because of not so much the philosophy, but the man, the best man for the job. And he really liked McAdoo. And of course, everybody in the building loves Spags. And that's going to be, you know, I think that lifts everybody's spirit. And Spags is just such an infectious personality and a good coach and an intense competitor that I think that was more important to Tom. Have that kind of stuff than the X's and O's and changing things up drastically from a schematic standpoint on defense.
Only two more questions for me. We're joined by Tom Rock from Newsday. Tom, was there any talk about the offensive line and thinking of how it might be arranged next year? I know a lot of people have talked this offseason about potentially moving Justin Pugh around, Weston Richburg going to center. Who's going to be the fifth starter? Is that guy in the roster yet? Is any talk about the offensive line, how that might be configured in 2015?
No, there wasn't much talk about that specific alignment and how those guys are going to play. But Tom did mention that it's still it's still kind of a work in progress, and it's still an area that he's focused on. So I think it's certainly open for speculation that they're going to draft high with another offensive lineman, bring him in. Weston Richburg certainly seems pretty much inked in at center. Schwartz, you know, they're kind of nursing him along a little bit through the spring, but he'll be back out there. And really, basically, it sounds like, you know, not from this breakfast, but from what I've been hearing, that, you know, Pugh's future position this year really depends on who they draft and what position that guy plays and where they find their best player. Now, they've always said, you know, we'll put the five best linemen out there, and you know, that. I don't think there's any doubt that Justin Pugh is will be one of their five best offensive linemen.
Absolutely,
it's just a matter of where the other guys fit in and how that works out.
Well, Tom, final question for me. You mentioned how this is the most relaxed you get, Tom Coughlin, over the course of a season. And based on some of your tweets, it seemed like he opened up as much as he ever will about people thinking about whether or not he's ready to retire, what his thoughts are on that, and almost how the losses the last 2 years, and apparently he went all the way back to 2008, and how that season still bothers him. And he kind of opened up a little bit about talking about his career, the losses, and where he is in terms of how much longer he wants to be a coach.
You know, I asked him, I said, you know, what happens on the field in the next couple of years, either winning a Super Bowl or just having the losses become too much, will that affect your decision, assuming it's his decision, to how much longer he coaches? And it didn't sound like it will. It sounded like he still has that competitive drive, and he still wants to, he wants to fix this. And then, but he also has that competitiveness in him. And he said he had a really good quote about retiring. He said, "People say you'll know when it's time." And he says, "Right now, I know the other way. He says, I know I'm not ready." So he's going to be around, I think, for a while. And you know, we make jokes at it with him. At this breakfast just about every year about when he's done coaching in 10 or 15 years and things like that. He calls himself a dinosaur, but he shows no signs of slowing down. And I don't, if it was up to him, I don't think he ever would.
Tom Rock, we appreciate your time. There was one other thing you put up on Twitter that I really wanted to touch on. Apparently Coach Coughlin mentioned Chris Snee as a guy who he may want to help get into coaching, and also said he's kind of helping out with scouting some of these offensive line prospects. I thought that was a rather interesting take.
Yeah, wasn't that fascinating? He said, Chris is always a film junkie, so
yeah.
He's been working with Glass a little bit, just kind of going over and grading tape on his own and helping out as they sort through these offensive linemen in college to get ready for the draft. So I thought that was really interesting. And of course, Chris hinted when he retired that he might want to get coaching, and he's been doing some. We're doing a little work with some players on a private level, I think he has said. You know, he kind of works with fundamentals with linemen, does some coaching that way. Tom said he spoke to him this year, this offseason, and said, if that's what you want to do, let me know, and we'll help you out, because obviously Tom knows people in the league. And he didn't really say that, obviously, he didn't make him an offer to coach with the Giants, but he could certainly point him in the right direction and get him in some doors. But he said Chris wasn't sure yet what he's going to do after football with his life yet. He's still getting accustomed to life after football, and so when he makes that decision, I'm sure he'll go to his father-in-law and take him up on that opportunity if that is what he decides to do.
Tom, great stuff. You have to leave the warm weather of Arizona and come back to the refrigerator that is New York City, man.
I'm going to stay here, I think.
I don't blame you. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate the great information today, my friend.
All right, fellas. I'll talk to you soon.
Tom Rock from Newsday. Great stuff from the owners' meetings and a lot of good stuff from Tom Coughlin. And, he said this is one of the more relaxed situations they'll get Tom in. And just based on the types of tweets he sent out, it sounds like Tom was very chippy's the wrong word, but playful maybe is the right one.
I just want to know, was Coach Coughlin in shorts and a T-shirt? I doubt it.
He was in a polo shirt. I don't think he was in shorts. They showed him NFL Network walking in to the breakfast this morning. I think he was wearing a navy blue polo, if I recall.
Don't think he was wearing sandals.
They did not show any of his interview, though, on NFL Network. I was literally watching from 9 a.m. to the show started at noon to try to see him live.
Wow.
They showed Mike Zimmer talking about Peterson, Chip Kelly on all his moves, I thought was actually very interesting. Garrett on the Hardy siding they showed.
Sure.
Trying to think of who else
they
showed up on.
They might have taped
there.
Delayed
Pete Carroll
Tom.
They had up
could,
there.
They could have taped delayed him for later, maybe.
They could have, but they didn't show him this morning. So it was great to have Tom on. And,
excellent.
And we'll stuff up on Giants.com later for some of the other stuff Coach Coughlin talked about as well. 201-939-4513. You've heard enough from us, so let's get to the calls. You guys have been waiting patiently. Let's start in Steve in Staten Island first. We could talk a little New York Giant football. Steve, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Paul? How are you, buddy? Johnny boy, what's up, brother? How you
Hi.
Doing?
I'm doing all right, Steve. How are you?
All right, listen, I'll tell you how I am. I mean, let's just get this season going. Now, listen, I got a comment.
You got to have the draft first, Steve. You got to have the draft first.
Listen, that's all formalities. Let's just get it going. Suit up, get the helmets and pads on. Let's play some Giants football. I'm pumped. That's what I know.
Paul's ready for that.
Oh,
absolutely.
Hey, listen, This I want to talk about. I talked about it a little yesterday, right? But I got to tell you, I want to talk about who I think the dark horse shining on this with the free agency was. And I got to tell you, so far, at least I don't know how you guys feel, but you see, like, the free agents they're signing this year, to me, those under the radar kind of guys. I like to call them quiet storms. They get the job done, and they don't make the big headlines, but you can always look at them in the stats book. I like the moves they're making this year so far better than the moves they made last year. I don't know if you would agree with that, but, I mean, that's my take on it. And I want to talk about Kendrick Ellis because I got to tell you something. Listen, this guy, to me, and I said it yesterday, this guy's going to be your quiet storm. This guy's going to go out there, he's going to get the job done, and he's going to be incredible against the run. And I like that. I like the signing of this kid.
Steve?
I mean, you heard a couple of negative stuff on him, but you know what? Being around those guys, I really think those guys are going to elevate his game. And I think you're going to see a really good Kendrick Ellis this year. And, you know, I got to tell you, I think it was a very good signing.
Steve,
what do you feel?
No, Steve, you know what? I wasn't on the show last week when they made the signing. I was on vacation, and I heard about it when I was out there in Vegas. And I immediately, and this is one of the guys I actually mentioned in the early parts of free agency that I thought would make sense. I think he's the perfect guy to come in here, go inside, do a better job stopping the run, something this team has to do better of this year than they did last year when they struggled against the run all season long. And I think it's a very good signing. He'll be a great 30 to 40 snap a game type of player to play next to Hankins to try to stop the run on first and second down. I think he'll be a great rotational player, and I think he'll be a big part of the defense. I agree. I think that was one of my favorite signings the Giants have made this offseason.
I like what they're doing this year because it's like I told you, I like the under-the-radar guys, the guys that get the job done. And now, listen, do you get everything you get out of everyone you sign a free agency? Obviously not. But you hope that it was worth the move. And so far, every player right now, to a man, they are making the right moves as an organization, and you could see that they're not only concentrating on offense, but they're also concentrating on defense and special teams. And, you know, good teams, that's what you expect out of teams that are good, that they don't concentrate just on one fixed position. They concentrate on the team as a whole. Okay, now, Devin Harris, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, the Giants signed him.
Dwayne Harris, yes.
Excuse me. Another under-the-radar kind of guy. Another under-the-radar guy that I like. And, I mean, I tell you, if you look at this offense now, and I said it to you, John, I think about a week ago, Shane Vereen, I mean, if they use this guy right, this is your next Dave Meggett. I mean, you know, I like what I see so far. And you know what? It's like I said, I know you got the draft, John. Formality, baby. Let's suit up. Let's play Paul. Paul, you're the best. John, I love you. Thanks for taking my call, bro.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, there's a lot there. I don't think that Ellis is going to play 40 snaps a game.
He's not capable. I think 40 might have been a little much. I think maybe you're looking at 20 to 25 in a run.
That's the number I'm looking at.
And you know, and I said 40, and I immediately kind of wanted to pull it back. I think 20 to 25 in a run stopping first and second down role is a lot more reasonable. Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So in that regard, I don't know if he's going to make quite the impact Steve does because in 20 to 25 snaps, you can only have so much impact.
Yeah, but you know what?
But he can be helpful.
If you drop the other team's rushing average on first down from 5 yards to 3 yards, guess what? You're making a pretty big impact.
And quite honestly, if he can also help you on third and one. And third
course.
Goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think it's a good signing. Please don't misunderstand, but I think when you're talking about big impact, I think you're talking about Vereen. I think you're talking about Harris. Those are the guys that they've brought in so far, to me, that I see making the most impact.
Here's my thing, though, about the Ellis signing, which is why I liked it so much. When you try to one through five, problems you wanted the Giants to solve last year.
Right.
The issues that they had. To me, Ellis directly addresses one of the top problems on that list.
Absolutely.
And that's why I think it was very important.
Agreed. I think the way I was describing it to someone I was talking to yesterday, I said, you know, the Giants have a few holes and they had a few cracks. What they've done for the most part this offseason is fill the cracks. They still have a couple of holes they got to fill. But I think they have filled the cracks.
Well, obviously, there's
more
still
work to be done.
There's still work to do. We talked about the safety position with Tom. Obviously, two very inexperienced players on the roster. You hope Shockey Brown can convert. Obviously, the Giants think they can. That's why they brought him back, and maybe they'll do that. Who knows if Bennett Jackson is going to be healthy? He's rehabbing that knee injury. We'll have to wait and see on that. But there's a lot of inexperience there. So you're going to have to see how they fill those two safety spots, and maybe some of the guys on the roster can do it. That's why you have spring practice. That's why you have training camp. We'll have to wait and see.
I'm anxious to see if NFL Network does run Tom Tom's conversation on tape delay, because right now we're only going off of Tom Rock's eyewitness account and his tweets. But the fact that Tom Coughlin did still address the rebuilding of the offensive line, of course, to an old school guy like me, is a great thing. That's music to my ears. And if you were to listen with what Tom Rock said just about 10 minutes ago when he was on our program, he said it certainly sounded like the way Coach Coughlin was talking, they were thinking about a high-priority draft pick for an offensive lineman. So you know where I'm going, folks.
201-939-4513, and Joe in Pennsylvania wants to talk about just that, the NFL draft. Joe, what's going on?
Oh, hi, guys, Darren. I agree with that last caller. I love the signings we just had in that. And I'm looking there what we have and where we're going to be, and I'm looking at that impact player there at number 9, and I'm just wondering if that guard everybody's talking about in Paulus is much going to be much better than some of these other tackles that are going to be available. And I was just looking there, and I really believe that White or that other good receiver is going to be there.
Cooper.
And I really think here I see what what's-his-name did last year for us, and he's going to be double-teamed a lot.
You mean Beckham.
Beckham, right?
We've got to help you with some of these names.
Him a lot. And if we – I was just looking – if we pick up one of them receivers or move down or get a speedster at least, let's go out. I know Tom says and Paul, let's be tough against the run, and we want to run the ball. Maybe we want to pass the ball. It'll make it a lot easier. We'll split them all out there, and it'll make us our linemen and our running backs, and with Vereen coming out of the backfield or any of our receivers there, we could really open it up and put the fear in them safeties and that, well, really and truly, I believe.
And let me just say this to you. I think the Giants have already enhanced their passing game with the signing of Harris, who we know can be a capable NFL receiver from his time with the Cowboys. He did some of that. It's not like he was only special teams.
He can be a third or fourth wide
absolutely
receiver. Sure.
So
I agree.
So that's an upgrade.
We have good receivers, but I'm looking for.
Well, but hold on,
there's another one there. If that comes to us, Paul, if he's as good as Beckham or Cook,
all right, but,
or if not. In this draft, there's going to be a speedster.
But you know what?
You know what I mean? That's somebody that they really have to worry about, that they won't be doubling Beckham all the time with the safeties and that. They won't know where to go. And then with Vereen coming out of the backfield or so, I mean, really, we could really split them out and put the fears and something like that.
How many footballs do you want Eli to throw at once?
Well, yeah, Joe, and I think Paul just brought up a great question. The issue you have here is that it's great to have all these weapons, and it certainly makes your team better. No one's going to argue with that. But look at a team like, say, the Atlanta Falcons the last few years. They've had a combination of Julio Jones, Roddy White, Harry Douglas, Steven Jackson, Jaquizz Rogers, Tony Gonzalez. At one point, you get the limited returns.
When you split them out like that and everything. Look at what Seattle, what they did, even on the goal line there, with what they had in Lynch, and they try to pass the ball. Is it easier to run the ball? There are bigger holes in that when you split them out when you have these receivers.
It's easier to run the ball.
Thank you, Joe.
What you have, a strong, beefy, physical, tough, mad, crazy offensive line that rams it down people's throats. That's when it's easier to run the ball.
Hey, look, and I'm not going to put it out of the realm of possibility that the Giants take a wide receiver in the draft. Because, look, they've done it so many times in the past, and if the Giants get to their draft board and, you know, they see their best wide receiver on the board that's still there at 9 and he's, you know, graded a whole half a point or point higher than their next best player, guess what? They're going to take the wide receiver. They're going to take the best player on the board if he's that much better than the next guy. So that could happen. I'm not ruling it out. But I think Paul made the point that I've tried to make before. You want to get the ball to Beckham. If Cruz is back, you want to get the ball to Cruz. Larry Donnell caught 50-something passes last year and had 8 touchdowns. Rashad Jennings is a good receiver out of the backfield. Vereen's a good receiver out of the backfield. At some point, you can only throw the ball X number of times per game. Mm-hmm. And if you're, let's say Eli, I'm being generous, let's say Eli averages 30 completions a game this upcoming year. And that's very generous.
Way generous.
All right, so let's say 25 and be more realistic.
Okay.
How about that? All right? Let's say you want to get Beckham around 8 to 9 catches a game, right? Something like that.
Okay.
You know, you're going to get your running backs probably 4 to 5.
Probably with Vereen. Wouldn't be surprised if it's like 7.
Cruz, you want to get 5 or 6.
They're running out. You're running out, John.
I'm out.
You're running out.
I'm out. So you get to the point here where, you know, it helps you and it makes your offense better, but is the value you're placing on these guys worth the return you're going to get when you have so many different guys in the mix? That's the point. For example, let me give a good example. This directly affected the Giants. When the Cowboys drafted Martellus Bennett, right?
Okay.
They had Jason Witten. I don't believe they had Dez Bryant at that time, but they had They had Terrell Owens on that roster
with him. Yes,
they had Glenn on the other side, the wide receiver. You obviously had Marion Barber and Julius Jones in the backfield who were weapons for them. And guess what? Martellus Bennett was a good player. But you couldn't use him to his full potential because Jason Witten's getting 90 catches. Terrell Owens is getting 90 catches. So
that's why he wanted out.
And that's why he left. And that's why when he left, you all of a sudden now he's a Pro Bowl tight end. So you can have all these talented guys, but unless there's a real space and a role for them, you're not going to get as much out of their ability as you can based on your other personnel.
The best way to describe what John is saying is that when you gauge the value of a player, there are actually a lot of ways to do that. You gauge his talent, for sure, because you want to scout what his athletic ability is. But one of the other ways you gauge the value of a player, and remember, I'm using the word value here, okay? How are you going to use him in your system? Where will you get him the ball? What situations is he going to play in? How much of an upgrade in terms of his value is he over the guys you currently have?
Let me give you a good example. Vasante Shianco, very talented player.
Very
Jeremy
athletic.
Shockey was here. Guess what? You just couldn't use him the way you wanted to. He leaves. He becomes a 50-60 catch guy. But because of Shockey being here, and Shockey was a better player than Vasante Shianco, he had to play ahead of him. But you're not getting as much out of Shianco because the other guys on the roster.
Absolutely.
That's the point I'm trying
to make. That is a great example, John. And ultimately, you know, when the Giants put their final board together, one of the things that they will do when they talk to Coach Coughlin and they talk to the coordinators and everybody else, one of the things they'll say is, okay, look, we're thinking about these guys, and this is where our value is, and this is who we're looking at. Oh, by the way, if we were to bring him here, you know what you're going to do with him? That's why Coach goes to the combine, John. There's a reason why Tom Coughlin sits there at the 40-yard mark, and he's timing guys, and he's watching guys. Coach Coughlin wants to go there because he's projecting, if we take him, I want to know what I'm going to do with him.
By the way, speaking of the draft, one thing Chip Kelly said today, and I'm not sure if I believe him, but I'm not sure if he would lie about it, that he had Odell Beckham Jr. as his number one player on his draft board last year.
Okay. Sure. Sure.
You don't buy it?
No.
Sounds like Paul Dottino doesn't buy that.
Not at all. Not at all.
So you're saying that's a little revisionist history?
I believe it is.
Okay. I just figured I'd throw it out there. Thought it was interesting. 201. 939-4513, SunnyBoy2323. It's a pretty decent tweet. Greatest show on turf was successful with Holt, Falk, and Bruce. But again, that's three guys. You need three guys, but how many are you going to have? That's the question. And they were also one of the best offenses in NFL history. They're playing indoors. Kurt Warner's throwing it 40 times a game. Is that what you want your offense to be?
No, the Giants will not be running the greatest show on turf. They will not be running that offense.
And then he asked, too, what was the point of signing Harris, you know, a return guy, a special teamer, in addition to a third or fourth wide receiver as a role player? To compare Dwayne Harris to a wide receiver you could potentially draft in the first round, I think is a little off base.
Yeah, that would be inaccurate. And I will say this, though. I believe it was either Rock or saying that Coughlin mentioned that Harris is a Tyree type. He's also a Dominic Hickson type. Hickson returned kickoffs and punts. He was a gunner.
Yeah.
And he also was an important part of the wide receiver rotation.
That's a great point.
He's another Dominic Hickson type with more speed.
Yeah, and a better blocker, too, as a wide receiver, a more physical player than Hickson was in terms of covering kicks and covering punts. Will in the Bronx, you're up next at 201-939-4513. What's going on, Will?
Hey, how you doing, John? How's it going, Paul?
What's up, Will?
Hi.
Okay, my question, well, I had a comment. First question, on the practice squad, how many players are allowed on the practice squad?
Eight.
Eight total? Okay.
Eight.
I think, John, I heard you mention something about the league looking at expanding the number of teams in the league.
Well, no, they're not looking to expand the number of teams. Well, they're going to potentially move teams to Los Angeles. I'm not sure at this point, adding teams is really something that's on the radar. I think they like it having six divisions, or rather eight divisions of four teams each.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I heard some. Well, it must have been in my mind then.
That's all right, Will.
Having five teams in each conference. I mean, in each division. And what's your take on that?
Well, I personally like the number as it is.
I think it's perfect. I think the way the league is set up now is perfect.
Really am not too cool on adding any more teams at all.
Maybe Will's talking about adding a team to the playoffs. Maybe that's where you got confused. Well, they are talking about trying to add another team to
one
the playoffs and have seven teams make the playoffs from each conference. We did talk about that on Monday.
Wasn't we also talking about expanding the number of games per season?
That's something that they talked about a few years ago. That's kind of been tabled. I think the Players Association really pushed back on that. So that's really not something that they're thinking about at the moment. But I could see that coming up again later where you reduce the preseason by a game or two and maybe you get up to 18 regular season games. But that is certainly not even something I think that was even openly discussed at these owners'
meetings. It didn't sound like it. But remember, the reason to go to 18 regular season games was primarily, if I understood it correctly, John, a business decision because they were hoping to gain revenue out of it.
Make money.
But now if you wind up throwing in an extra playoff game in each conference, that will help generate TV revenue because the networks are going to give you a lot more money for those playoff
games.
That's
a fair point.
And so that may, if that happens...
Unless it's NFL Network and then it's in-house, so you're really not getting more money.
Yeah, but they wound up leasing those suckers out to CBS last year anyway. Mm-hmm. So that may just absolutely dissolve the talk of the 18 games if they get that extra playoff game in each conference.
Thank you, Will.
I'm not done. Just one more thing.
Yeah, real quick.
I'm sorry, guys.
That's all right.
Where I was going with was because I think expanding, ultimately you want to expand the market, right, to other countries like we're doing. So that's why when I thought I heard to say expanding one team conference, you know, that adds eight additional teams. So I just went into this whole scenario where you can only expand the season by two games and throw in maybe an extra bye week if you did that. And each team would play 10 division games. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, here's my scenario. Each team plays 10 division games. You play one against the other three divisions in your conference, and you play one AFC division, right? Mm-hmm. So now the wild cards, you know, you keep the format the same. The division winners get to the playoffs. But what changes is how do you get to the wild card? And basically what now is important is those additional AFC games that are played. So now, and that gives you more exposure to playing AFC. It gives, you know, a little bit more of a competition for the other teams. You know, because the current format we got now, you get the four division winners and then two of the best record in the conference, right?
Where are you going here, Will? What's your final problem you're trying to solve with this?
The addition of the additional teams, that's all.
Well, I think asking for eight additional teams, and I think that's what you're talking about, having five in each division, I don't think that's something the NFL is looking to do.
I would be really shocked. To be honest, I've never heard anything of that nature proposed.
Thank you.
Quite frankly, John, look, even when there was talk, heavy talk, a couple of years ago about going 18 regular season games, mm-hmm. you heard a lot of the players talking about physically, we can't do it. 18 is going to be a real, real issue for us. And I think that's why the NFL started thinking, well, how else can we enhance the value of our television contracts if we're not going to get the 18 games? And I think that, to me, at least behind the curtain, is kind of where the one extra conference wild card game has kind of, or wild card team has kind of come out of. To me, that's what's happening here. Because I think even the league is thinking, the players, with all the safety and health issues, we're never going to get the 18 out of them.
Our buddies over at Big Blue Uncensored makes a good point. Remember last year they upped the practice squad to 10? You can have the two veterans on there that don't fit the old rules.
Oh,
remember they increased the size? I had forgotten about it too, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, the other thing is too, those other spots are, they're not used. They're like inconsequential. I don't think every team used them.
I'm not sure if they did either. That's a good point. 201-939-4513. Charlie G, 68. OBJ would make sense on a Chip Kelly offense, so I doubt it, but who cares? Well, I think Odell Beckham could fit in any offense, just for the record.
Yeah, okay.
You put him out in space in that the way the Eagles run their offense, I think he'd do pretty well. Just saying.
Yeah.
And then he has another funny tweet. at G68_Charlie. My son didn't believe that the Cardinals used to be in the NFC East, which I'm sure a lot of young people don't remember that.
Wow.
It shows how old we are.
The days of Jim Hart at quarterback for the St. Louis Cardinals playing in the
Dave Craig
Busch Stadium. Oh, boy.
201-939-4513. Let's go to AJ in South Carolina. He's been holding the longest. AJ, what's up?
Good afternoon. I got a comment and a question.
Sure.
I like what the Giants have done in free agency on defense and special team in addition, stopping the one. I think they can improve on paper.
Yeah, look, I think a lot of the moves the Giants have made will help them on special teams almost immediately. I think both linebackers they brought in, especially Casillas, will be a very good special teams player. We talked about Harris on special teams as well. So, yes, I think their special teams will be markedly better. They re-signed Mark Herzlich, which is as much a special teams move as is a defensive move. So I think their special teams have taken a step. And I think their run defense has probably taken a little bit of a step forward, too, with the signing of Ellis and of George Selvey, who's a very good run-stopping defensive end. So I think in those respects, you're right. They have made some improvements. But as Paul said, there are still some issues that need to be addressed.
Dwayne Harris, do you think he take both duties on kickoff return and punt return?
Yep, he can do both.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, AJ. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513. I haven't heard from Shakes in Baltimore, Maryland in a while. Shakes, what's going on, pal?
Oh, is he next? Wow.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
How are you, Shakes?
Hey, what's going on, man? I got a question for y'all. Running backs, right?
Yeah.
When I'm evaluating all these running backs in the draft, it is so many running backs, and I mean it's special running backs in this draft. So my question for y'all is, with the acquisition of Shane Vereen, do you think that drafting a running back in this draft is out the question?
I'll never say it's out of the question, because if they get to round 3 or 4 and they see a guy with a first-round grade on him and he's still there, they're going to pick him. But I think running back, in my opinion at least, and that's all I'm giving you. I don't know what the front office is thinking. That the running back position is extremely low on the list of needs for this team right now. They have a young guy in Andre Williams. They have a young veteran in Shane Vereen. They have another pretty young veteran with not a lot of tread off the tires in Rashad Jennings. To me, running back is not a huge need. But again, if you get to the point here and you're in the fourth round and for some reason, Tevin Coleman at Indiana is still on the board, which he's not going to be, but just theoretically, you say, we got to take this kid, they're going
to
take him.
It would have to be a very unique circumstance for me to understand them taking it back.
Right.
It really would. I mean, they just spent a pretty decent amount of money on Vereen
to
bring him in here.
Off, P-Dot, but that's why I was kind of upset with the Shane Vereen signing. It's not that I think that Shane Vereen is not a good player, because I do think he's a good player, but I was upset because I felt like this draft, you can get a special running back, and in the 5 to 10 years, you can have a very good combo in the whatever running back you had took in this draft and Williams. So with the acquisition of Shane Vereen, I'm like, oh, man, that kind of poops on us taking a running back in this draft. And
well, but remember what Vereen does for this offense, though. I mean, it's his pass catching, his third down scat back ability, his ability to make big plays with his yak yardage, his ability to sometimes – remember what John was talking about before about, how many balls can you have to go around? It's a limited return there.
Yeah.
Well, Vereen can also go out and play some wide receiver, too. I mean, you're going to get the ball to him in space in so many different ways. This is not talking about like a conventional running back that you're going to draft in the third or fourth round.
Shakes. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're thinking going to this draft where you're going to find value in the third, maybe the fourth round, is at a running back because it's so deep.
Yep.
Much like wide receiver last year, you got guys going in the third round that end up being starters at the end of their rookie season. So I get where you're coming from.
Right.
But I think there are enough talented players at other positions where that's not going to necessarily hurt you.
Okay, guys. Thanks for taking my call, man. I'll call soon.
All right, Shakes. Oh, that was a quickie from Shakes today.
I think, John, a lot of the backs that people are talking about in that second, third, and fourth round.
Or more every down type of backs, right?
Right.
Yeah, there aren't a ton of scat backs available. I mean, you got Amir Abdullah out of Nebraska, who I think can play that role a little bit. You know, maybe Duke Johnson from Miami, who a lot of people now think might be more of a full-time back than a scat back. I think he's a little small for my taste. But, you know, there are some guys out there. But I think what I'll say about Vereen, the things he's really good at,
he's really
catching
good at
the ball.
He's really
protecting
good at
the passer.
He's really good at.
Those are also often things rookie running backs aren't great at, especially the protecting the passer part of the position.
They
so,
need time.
I do think there's some copy with Rashad Jennings, because Rashad Jennings also excellent pass catcher. Now again, not as elusive as Vereen, not as good of a route runner as Vereen. I think the hands are just as good, but he doesn't have those other two parts of the package, and Jennings also a good pass protector. So, again, I don't think you can find a Shane Vereen type of player in the draft.
I don't think so either.
At least not in year number one he's in the league. He's not going to give you what Vereen gives you.
Totally agree. And that's why this, to me, is a very good signing for them, because he gives them an entirely different package, an entirely different dynamic that, you know, you're not going to just pick up in the draft with a rookie and say instantly he's going to give us that. And especially with what McAdoo wants to do with his checkdowns and his West Coast-style offense.
Our buddy Ben Gruen on Twitter makes a good point. Giants passed for 4,400 yards last year. Eli, 30 touchdowns, not right. A lot of picks. Team only still won 6 games. You have to be balanced and you have to run the football, too.
You don't have to sell me on that.
I know that. I know that. This is an interesting question I'll give to you. At PK2x4. If Cruz can play this year, do you think he has a better chance of staying healthy? Remember, he had been hurt at the end of the last two seasons the
Correct.
Giants have played.
Yep.
Do you think he has a better chance of staying healthy with Beckham getting more attention and more targets from Eli Manning?
I don't think you can ever
predict that, right?
Yeah, you can never put a percentage on what's the odds of this guy staying healthy. Excuse me, because quite honestly, the only thing you can say is that if a player has less of a workload, and you usually talk about this in terms of running backs,
right.
John, for example, Rashad Jennings. I believe that part of what happened with Rashad Jennings, he had a heavy workload the first half of last year. And I think maybe that could have potentially been part of what happened to him, but maybe not. Again, I'm not a doctor.
What week did he get hurt?
I want to say week five. I thought it was five.
Could be five.
You know, but he remember he had that huge game where he like carried the ball for like a career high number.
Yeah, he had 20 carries yardage. Something like 3 weeks in a row, right? Something like that. Hmm?
Yeah, what week
Falcons?
Was that though, Nile?
Falcons was week
five. It was five,
yeah.
Right. I thought it was five. So what I'm saying to you is, you know, I do think that specifically with running backs, you can say, well, if we get this guy 5 or 6 touches a game, that there is probably a little bit of a lesser chance that he gets beaten up. I think you can maybe say that, and that's not even scientific. That's simply a gut feel. I don't know about a wide receiver. I don't know that a wide receiver's position is as physically involved in the heart of the line and the beating up and all that other stuff that happens with the contact. I don't know if 3 or 4 catches a game is going to make that much difference to him. But I do think it does make a difference to a running back if all of a sudden you say, look, you're getting 5 less carries a game. I do think that's probably the only position where I would even feel comfortable suggesting that a lesser workload might help his health.
Sonny Boy clarifying one of his tweets. He wasn't comparing Harris to whoever the Giants could draft in the first round. He was referencing that in terms of the return game. If you're going to use Beckham in the return game, why are you signing Harris? And my answer to him was that, like Tom Rock said, Beckham would be that not even once a game guy. Once every couple games, guy, when you need a special play in a big spot at the end of the game, that's when you throw Beckham in there.
Do you know what? I'm not so sure that Harris isn't good enough to make a big play on the returns himself.
Oh, sure he can.
He's really good.
Yeah, but no one's an athlete like Odell Beckham Jr.
Granted. But I think if Harris explodes out of the gate and does very, very well on returns.
Oh, yeah, he could
be
there.
Tom might just leave him there.
He might. Absolutely.
He
I
could.
Can see that, too.
He's got the.
No, know. Harris didn't have any touchdowns last year for Dallas, but the 2 years before that, he had a punt return in 2013 and 2012 for touchdowns.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Take that for what you will. 201-939-4513. Charles in New York. Charles, you're up next.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, Charles.
Hi.
Hey, I have a few things I just want to get off my chest.
Sure.
Especially about the offensive line and the draft. You know, everyone's talking about wanting to draft White or Cooper, and I just don't think that's a necessary thing for the Giants because there's plenty of receivers we can get in later rounds and to complement what we already have.
Well, Charles, quite frankly, I don't know if there's a guarantee those guys are both going to be there. It would not shock – I think the Raiders are taking a wide receiver, and it would not shock me if another team that picks ahead of the Giants takes one of those two guys too. So I think there's a shot one of them's on the board, but I think right now it's, you know, maybe a 50-50 shot.
I'm with John on this. I think maybe one of them's there, and quite frankly, the other thing we're leaving out here – how do you know that a team's not going to trade up ahead of them
That's
to get
true.
One of those guys,
too? Yeah, Charles, honestly, my sense is that those two guys are moving up the boards. I think both those guys are pretty special wide receivers, much on the same area and plane as Sammy Watkins was last year, as Odell Beckham was last year, as Mike Evans was last year. Remember, Mike Evans in February last year was a middle-of-the-first-round pick. By the time he got to the draft, he was in the top five. So I could see those guys moving up a little bit as the weeks move ahead.
These guys are being targeted. I don't think there's any
doubt. No, they're good. They're really good players.
I don't think there's any doubt about it.
I'm sorry, Charles. Go ahead.
No, that's quite all right. I loved everything you gentlemen said, but it's just saying that even if they are there by any chance, I just don't think the Giants should reach for another receiver of what we already have. And another thing with the offensive line is everyone wants – no, I really want the Giants to get Sheriff. I think he'll be a great guard. Even if he does play tackle, I'm not sure if Pugh would be a good guard because he's not proven in the NFL as a guard.
You know what? I go back to what we've said 100 times, maybe 1,000 times on this show. The best 5 offensive linemen will play regardless of position. If the Giants were to draft Scherf and they were to bring him in and decide, you know what, we think he's a better fitted guard, then there's a spot at left guard just waiting for him to steal. If they think he's going to be a better tackle, then you know what? He's going to play right tackle, and Justin Pugh's going to slide over to left guard. He's going to smile, and he's going to work his butt off.
And remember, Justin Pugh and Charles.
I know he played guard in college, but is he an NFL guard?
Well, no, remember, Justin Pugh, also, the thing I like about it, while he played left tackle in college, he did play on the left side. So he's not going to be screwed up with the footwork playing on the left side, which makes me more comfortable moving him inside. Do I know if he's going to be a great guard, a dominant guard? No, nobody knows. This is all projections because he's never done it. Like Paul said on Monday, I think he has the athleticism to pull and do the things you need to succeed in some areas of guard play. I do think he'll probably have to get a little bit stronger to anchor a little bit better against some of those big defensive tackles. But
I think Scherf would be a better guard than at tackle.
Yeah, you know what? You could be right. And I think some NFL scouts and some of the guys out there think Scherf is going to be a better guard. But a lot of people think he'll be just fine at a right tackle where you need a little bit more power. So I think he's good either way. And I think if they do wind up with Brandon Scherf, and again, who knows if he's even there, not when the Giants pick, you know, I think you have a great situation where you have two players in Scherf and Pugh that are both flexible, and wherever the guys play the best, that's where they'll wind up. And I think that's a great luxury to have.
I will add this one other caveat to you. As much as I believe that at pick 9, you really value a tackle there more than you value a guard, I will tell you if the Giants draft Brandon Scherf, okay, and I jump through the roof because I'm really happy and excited about it, I will tell you this. I don't care where he winds up playing. If it is left guard, fine. It's left guard. The bottom line is the line will be better, and that's a good thing.
That's exactly what we need. We need to get a solid running game going to have any better chance of getting to the playoffs again.
Well, it starts in the trenches, my friend. You know that.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Charles.
I appreciate you, gentlemen.
Hey, thanks for calling in. Charles, thanks for listening. We appreciate you guys out there. Excellent job on the calls, everybody. All right, Paul, we got 5 minutes. Why don't we take a look at some of these tweets here?
Go.
At Ben Gruen, do the Giants need a true cover linebacker in Spags' system? Field always tried to have that. Don't remember a good cover linebacker on the 07-08 team when Spags was the DC.
Well, you know, here's what you want to remember about what Spags does. He will primarily lean on the front four to get the heat that he wants to get, and then he will send linebackers through the A and B gaps. He will send safeties off the edges. Those are the kinds of things that characterize his defense when he was here. Antonio Pierce was the heart and soul at middle linebacker of that championship defense, and Pierce was okay in coverage. He wasn't a superstar in coverage, but he was okay in coverage. At this point, I don't know where Beeson's health is, so I don't know if he's going to be able to duplicate the things that Pierce did or not. But I don't think that is necessarily the number one component or characteristic of his defense.
Here's one for you, and I think I know the answer. from Sunnyboy2323. Do you think Scherf is as good or better than Zach Martin was coming out of college last year?
No, Zach Martin was absolutely blue chip through and through. And look, I mean,
so here's the thing.
Made the Pro Bowl, for goodness sakes, as a rookie.
Well, here's the thing, though. I've seen people describe them the both ways in this way. Last year, I heard people call Zach Martin maybe the safest pick in the draft. He had the highest floor. And I've heard people describe Brandon Scherf that way this year as well.
I mean, we're talking about similar caliber of prospect, but I don't think that, you know, there was any doubt in my mind about Zach Martin last year. We've already talked about him enough.
Charlie G, he mentions good OT in the second round, Andres Pete. Well, Andres Pete's not going to be there in the second round.
Don't think so.
He might actually be able to board in the top 15. I've seen some people mock him to the Giants at pick number 9. I think it's McShay or Kuiper have Andres Pete going to
Kuiper,
the Giants.
I think.
Maybe it's Kuiper?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have here's another guy here, and I'm going to butcher the name. Cedric Ogbehi, I think his name is, another guy who's out there. Let's see.
The one thing you want to keep in mind about Pete is that he really is going to have to bulk up. If he's especially going to play right tackle, John, where that's your anchor tackle, he's been a left tackle at Stanford. So there are two things you need. You need to not only get stronger and put some beef on your frame to be able to manhandle folks on that side of the line. The other thing, you have to have that mentality. And I think there are some people at this point who are questioning whether or not he has that pit bull aggressiveness that you need to be a mauler at the right tackle spot. Those are the big, you know, question marks right now on Pete's chest in terms of if you want to project a sure thing at that spot, which is why Scherf is rated higher than he is.
At Mr. Felton 23, a lot of mock drafts are starting to push Danny Shelton out of the top 10. Do you think the Giants can land him at number 9?
Boy, John, I know you like him, and I know, I think he's a terrific pick and a terrific player. Again, my problem is with the need component. I mean, I just think the Giants signed that plugger at defensive tackle right now. I don't know that they need to draft a defensive tackle at number 9 at this point. I think if I had to go defensive line at number 9, I'd be more inclined to go for a defensive end. But that's just me.
Let's see what else we got here. At Tag Rocket, how is our linebacker core at the moment? There isn't a big playmaker in the draft, ?
Well, you know, I think that we've seen enough to know that when John Beeson is able to get on the field, he is a difference maker. I'm not going to say right now he's the all-pro player that he was some years ago with Carolina. I won't go that far at this point. Some time has passed. Some injuries have occurred. But I still think he's a difference maker. I do think if you listen to Tom Rock early in the program, and I don't know if you were tuned in during the first 15 minutes, but when he said in discussing with Tom Coughlin, Beeson's name came up, Coach talked about how he needs to be the leader. He needs to be the guy who's going to be the rah-rah guy. He's going to be that Antrell Roll guy who helps raise everybody else's game. And, you know, sometimes, John, and you can't underestimate this, sometimes it's not just the plays that that player makes, but it's the plays that he helps to draw out of his teammates that can help your ball club. And I do think that Beeson's that kind of guy. I mean, he lines people up in the right spots.
If he's healthy.
Again, he's got to be on the field.
Right.
But I do think he makes your team better. You know, they talk about that in basketball a lot. You know, is he just a terrific player who puts up numbers, or does he make his team better? I think Beeson does.
DJ Bobby Fingers, Cruz injury was a freak one. Doesn't really relate to having a strong or weak workload. We agree with that. That was the point we made. And then we have, let's see, Patrick Kiernan wants to know, regardless of what position Scherf plays, is he a better run-a-game lineman or pass-game lineman?
Actually, he's very good at both.
I think he's good at both. But, you know, he's seen more as a power guy than he is like a quick-feet athletic guy, if you want to look at it that way.
I would agree with that.
Zach Bell, do you think the Giants will draft a tight end this year?
Well, they've re-signed Daniel Fells, but you would think they would, if they don't draft a tight end, you would think they'll bring some free agents in, some rookie free agents undrafted off the street to add to competition. Because after all, you got to have competition at that spot.
All right, finally, Anthony in Phoenix, I'll close with him, 8ABR127. Dupree would be fine. What do you think of Dupree? Do you see him as a tweener, or do you see him as a legit D-end? That's Bud Dupree, by the way.
Yeah. You know, John, I still need to see more.
He's close.
Yeah.
He's close.
In my notes, I've got him as a defensive end. In my notes right now. That's where I've got him.
So do I.
But I can be moved off of that. I'm not 100% sold
on him.
You're
not sold?
Not 100% yet. But I lean towards he's a defensive end, and I lean towards, yes, him being one of the guys in my cluster. I lean toward that right now, today, on March 25th. Okay? So don't hold me to that. It's only March 25th.
I can put it up on the wall.
I do lean toward him being, though, a defensive end.
Don't make me put it up on the wall, Paul.
And being in my cluster.
All right.
But that's
Bud Dupree is in Paul's cluster. I don't know what that means, but we'll go with it. Everybody, good job on the phones. I was happy to get to a lot of your Twitter questions today. It was fun. Good job as always. Thanks for joining us. Tomorrow, I believe it's me and Anita Marks tomorrow. Is that accurate?
Okay. No, I'm not in.
Are you in?
No, I'm not
I know
in.
Lance is in, so I guess it's me and Anita.
I'm done for the week.
Thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Everybody have a good one.
He's got through. 35, 30.
Want to get no punch. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.